We're two of the filmmakers. A team of four people made this film. This is the director, writer, Dennis Hennelly. I'm one of the producers, Casey Suhan. And before we give an introduction to our first speaker, we just wanted to thank the Red Vic Movie House. And, you know, for those of you who come here, you know how amazing this place is. For those of you who are coming here for the first time, come again and again. This is one of the very last truly independent theaters in this country. And getting this movie made was an obstacle. Getting this movie programmed and seen has been even a bigger obstacle, if you can believe it. So, you know, having venues like this is really important. This is a community, worker-owned venue. When you buy the popcorn, you're paying for the theater, you're paying for the workers, and you're paying for a space to see amazing movies like this and get messages and information that you're never, ever going to get in a Hollywood film, and that you're, you know, you can go and share and make the world maybe a little bit better place. So here's to the Red Vic, come back.
And we will be doing a quick Q&A after the film, and we'll also have a speaker, so you'll get to meet the other filmmakers, and we have some actors here as well. But I just wanted to introduce our special guest to speak before the film. The two people who are most responsible for the way that I think about animals are actually here tonight. One of them is Rachel Katz, who introduced me to a book written by John Robbins. And I'm sure John Robbins has touched many of you in this room, and with his writing and with his speaking, and we're deeply honored to have him. I think we can safely say this movie wouldn't exist without John. So I'd like to welcome him to the stage.
Okay, so I'm mic'd.
Yes.
Can you hear me better than you could hear them?
Yeah.
No. Yes. Sort of.
Are we quiet?
Yeah, you're well, thank you very much for being here, for bringing your attention, your presence, your caring to this extraordinary film. It's provocative. It's going to make you think. It's going to make you feel. So if you want to stay psychically numb and shut down, this is not the place to be tonight. But a lot of us don't want that, and we feel actually a responsibility as human beings on the planet, part of the web of life, part of the Earth community, you know, part of this vibrating, living, pulsing thing that is life, to be responsible in our choices and our actions and bring our lives into more alignment with our compassion, with our caring, with the heartfulness that we live with. And that's what this film is really about. It's about people who don't want to just sit by passively, resigned, you know, in despair, in the sense that they can't do anything, so why try anyway? But there is a lot of that feeling, that apathy, that pervades our culture. And what I think of when I think of our society and animals is I think of schizophrenia. It's like we're sick, we're mentally ill. And when I say schizoid or schizophrenia, I literally mean it, because on the one hand, as a society, we have animals that we call pets, you know, or companion animals. And as a society, we treat them with love, we lavish our affection on them, we treat them as part of our families, we give them names, we pay their vet bills, we buy their food, we sleep with them very often, which is actually quite intimate, and we bond across that species line. There's a human-animal bond there that's actually very beautiful. But as a society, we do that. And then, on the other hand, we call other animals dinner. And by virtue of that tricky semantic distinction, we feel entitled to treat those animals here with any manner of cruelty, so long as it lowers the price per pound. You see the schizoid? And I mean that literally, that we feel entitled to do that. There are laws prohibiting some degree of cruelty against animals. There is legislation in all 50 states. And in every one of the 50 states, that legislation that does exist against cruelty to animals specifically exempts animals destined for human consumption. So, literally, agribusiness routinely does things to the animals that they own that if you did it to a dog or a cat, you'd be put in jail. The legislation that we have prohibiting cruelty to animals, it does not apply if that animal is called dinner. So that's therefore the industry proceeds to treat these animals as though they weren't animals, as though they were just resources to convert into revenue. And the results for the animals are dire. The routine cruelty that goes on in factory farming, in modern meat production, is so severe that you don't have to be a vegetarian or an animal rights activist or a particularly empathic human being if you see it. If the veil is lifted, if you actually contact what is routinely done, to be abhorred, to be appalled. But the industry, of course, wants to keep the veil in place. They want to keep people's eyes shut. They want to keep your mind dull. They want to keep you estranged from your power to act. They want to keep you numb and unfeeling. And so that's why this film is revolutionary, because it does exactly the opposite of that. So I'm pleased to host it. I'm pleased to be here with you. And it's provocative, and it's going to make you think, and it's going to make you feel, and I am grateful. Thank you.
Thank you for staying. And we have a very special guest here who's going to say a few words to you now. His name is Jake Conroy. This film is about people who break the law in order to liberate animals. But really, these laws are being used and applied against people who are just exercising their freedom of speech rights in this country. And Jake Conroy was one of the Shack 7 co-defendants. That was indicted under terrorist and conspiracy charges for violating the Animal Enterprise Protection Act, which has since been upgraded to the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act that you see in this film. Do you want to talk about the Shack?
Just briefly, you can read about the Shack case, and Jake can tell you more, but they were doing things that most Americans would consider to be protected free speech, like running a website.
Let's have Jake come on up. The Shack 7 were found guilty, and Jake did 3 years in prison for his work with Shack USA and has been an animal liberation activist for 15 years.
So as Casey said, my name's Jake. I'm a co-defendant with the Shack 7 case. Within the past year, I've celebrated my anniversary of getting out of prison after serving 37 months in federal prison and about 6 months under the supervision of a federal halfway house, and then was released on a probation recently this past May.
Louder, please.
So I'm sorry, I'm a little sick, so you're going to have to bear with me. When I was going into prison, I was waiting to turn myself in, and I had a lot of things from various different people saying, oh, you should find a hobby, you should find something to pass the time while you're in prison, make the time go by faster. And I thought, yeah, I'll come up with a couple things. I thought the two things I thought of was that I'm going to teach myself how to play the guitar, and I'm going to come out of prison with six-pack abs. Right? So unfortunately, I'm not up here with a guitar, and I'm not going to show you my stomach. But the other thing is they had a group there in prison called Toastmasters. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Toastmasters, but you could actually join Toastmasters in prison. And you know, they helped you speak in front of a crowd, be comfortable up on stage in front of a crowd. And unfortunately for all of you, I didn't take that either. You have to bear with me for a few minutes. But we just finished watching Bold Native. I've seen it a couple of times. I really enjoy it. And actually, every time I see it, it keeps getting better for me. I think it's really exciting. I just want to thank Casey and Dennis one more time for making it. I think it's a great opportunity to be able to talk about these issues and these tactics that maybe a lot of people might have issues with or might not even know about, and it's a great opportunity to get those out there. I think it's also really an exciting movie. It's dramatic, it's engaging, you can really start feeling for Charlie and all the characters, and to me that's great as well. What we also need to remember is that it is a work of fiction, and I think Casey and Dennis would be the first ones to agree with me that it's not a how-to manual and it's not a history lesson. When I first got involved in animal rights in about 1995, 1996 in Seattle, Washington, I started reading about direct action and the Animal Liberation Front, and I romanticized the whole issue, and it's very easy to do that, and I think it's a good thing to romanticize it. And in 1996, I worked with an organization called the Northwest Animal Rights Network, and we did demonstrations around the Seattle area. And we went and did a demonstration at a place called Honeybee Hams in Bellevue, Washington, because a few days earlier, the ALF had attacked the building and smashed out a couple of windows and spray painted the building and the sidewalks. And we wanted to go do like a solidarity demonstration. So we showed up a few days later, and I showed up a couple minutes early with some friends, and we just kind of walked around the building and saw the damage. That was the first time I'd really seen direct action up front. And it was really beautiful, and it was passionate, and it was immediate, and it was exciting to see this. And that's pretty much all I got out of it. You know, I romanticized it, and I was excited by it. So fast forward a few years to 2001, I got an opportunity to move from Seattle out to Philadelphia to start this office for this organization called Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty USA. And so I had these plans to go out to Philly for 3 months and pack up my belongings and put them all in a box and move out. And so I moved out to Philly. We started this office. 3 months passed, and I never went back. And I ended up working with Shaq for five and a half years. And then we got indicted, and we went to trial, and we ended up in prison. And I did 3.5 years in prison. So I get out just recently and moved to San Francisco, and I get these boxes back that you know, I hadn't looked through in a decade, you know, and find all this weird crap in there that is embarrassing and whatnot. But I came across this poster that I remember purchasing or getting my hands on in 1997 about the Zapatistas. I'm not sure if people are familiar with the Zapatistas, but the Zapatista Liberation National Army in Mexico is a guerrilla organization that's been fighting for indigenous rights and greater autonomy in the southern Mexican state of Chiapas. And these are women and men that started the struggle in 1994. And you're not going to find a much more iconic version of revolution next to Che Guevara that's so romanticized and put up on a pedestal, and rightfully so, across the world. You know, they're women and men that are wearing balaclavas, and they're living in the jungle, and they're carrying these rifles, and they're armed to the teeth, and they're going against the Mexican government toe-to-toe and literally pushing them out of their state and saying, we want our freedom. And it's this amazing struggle because it's so powerful and so visual, but so so inspiring. You know, these people are fighting against the government with guns that they haven't fired since 1994, probably because they don't work, and they probably can't even find ammunition for them. But they're fighting and they're struggling. And so I found this poster, and I brought it with me because I wanted to share it with you guys, because it really started me thinking about direct action in general. And I don't know if you can see it very well, but it's basically, you know, Subcomandante Marcos here on this horse, and he's got the Zapatista army behind him, the women and men in balaclavas and rifles and flags, and they're marching through the jungle, you know, and And it says, try to place yourself on this side of the ski mask. And it's a simple phrase, but it got me thinking, you know, and the first thing I thought was, these guys are in the jungle, where the hell are they going to sleep at night, you know? And I was like, well, it's kind of a silly thing to think, but I don't know, it really kind of spoke to me and made me think about, you know, what is it like to be on the other side of that mask, to be on the other side of the ski mask? And for the Zapatistas, it must be, you know, when I wake up in the morning and I go out, what are we going to get ourselves into? What are we going to come across? Am I going to get captured? Am I going to get shot? Am I going to get killed? And yeah, I'm marching through the mud in the jungle for 16 years. Where the hell am I going to sleep at night that's warm and dry? So it got me thinking, and it brought me back to that day at Honeybee Hams, and started thinking, what was going on in their minds, you know, behind the mask, when these people, you know, they may have just simply thrown a rock through a window and spray painted some slogans and took off. But I would imagine, you know, something like, you know, what happens if someone sees us? What happens if you know, a cop car drives by? What happens if an alarm goes off? We get to the car doesn't start. You know, I would imagine that's what goes through these people's heads. And I started applying it to some of the actions I'd been reading about, like, and similar ones we've seen here, where people are breaking into laboratories and they're breaking into fur farms and liberating hundreds, if not thousands, of animals. They're setting unoccupied buildings on fire. The risk and the struggle and the passion and the commitment that goes on, that, you know, we romanticize in the movies and the literature and the magazines and the T-shirts, but sometimes we don't stop and think about what's going on behind the mask. For me, the closest thing that I've had an opportunity to experience when it comes to direct action is, you know, basic civil disobedience stuff and sabotaging some whale hunts off the coast of Washington State. But unfortunately, what I have experienced is sometimes the consequence of direct action, which is prison. And as Casey said, I spent a little over three years in federal prison, two federal prisons. And the first one I was in, I spent 2 years in Southern California. And it was pretty much everything that you see in the movies. It was fights, beatings and riots, stabbings, gang warfare, gang politics, racial politics, on a daily basis. And you had to live with that and navigate those waters very carefully, because it's an extremely volatile and very dangerous situation. And there wasn't a day that went by through that entire time I was in prison that I wasn't terrified, and I wasn't scared, and I wasn't depressed, and I was miserable, and it was a terrible experience. But one of the ways that I got through that is every day when I got up, I'd remind myself that I'm going to have fun today. You know, I'm going to laugh. I'm going to have a good time. I'm going to hang out with my friends. I'm going to tell a joke. And I'm going to get by day by having a good time. And the other thing that got me through those days was the letters and the books and the postcards and the mail that I received every single day. I remember when I first got into prison, you always hear these stories. People go to prison and, oh, yeah, you'll get mail every day. You know, they'll just come pouring in. It'll be great. You know, and the first few days, I didn't get anything. And obviously, you know, the mail hadn't caught up with me, but, you know, it's, you know, you're kind of messed up in the head at the time. When you're first in prison, you're like, where's all this mail, you know? And so the first letter comes, you know, and you're like, oh, great, a letter, you know, cool. And then the second day, you get a few more letters, and then a few more letters. And then by, like, the end of the first few weeks, I was literally getting like 20 to 50 letters every single day. And it was amazing. And I remember this one guy used to always say to me, weren't you on Friends? Is this the guy who was on Friends? I wasn't in Friends. I'm pretty sure you were. Get all this mail. And I say these things because it's so important to remember our prisoners and our friends that are in prison. And make sure to support them. And tonight we all got a sheet of paper on our seat, and there's some more in the back if you don't have them, that lists political prisoners throughout the country. I think internationally, no.
I think there might be some.
There might be some international prisoners on it, but mostly they're animal activists, they're environmentalists, they're liberation struggle activists that are locked inside of prisons for standing for what they believe in. And I really encourage you to take an opportunity. It's unfortunately a very large list, and all of us can't write all of them. But it's really important maybe to find one or two that kind of speak to you, and try to form a communication with them and a friendship, so that their time in prison can be a little bit easier. So as I said, I got all the consequences of direct action, but none of the romanticism of direct action. So I can't really tell you how it feels to break into a laboratory and run out with a beagle puppy or you know, something really exciting like that, but I can tell you what it feels like to be locked inside of an 8x10 cell every night with a steel door locked in behind you and hoping that it's going to open the next morning. Because sometimes it didn't. You know, I can tell you what it feels like to be locked inside of that cell for 7 weeks with not being able to get out 24 hours a day and having a single jar of peanut butter to survive on for 7 weeks so that, you know, we can, like, I could stay vegan for that entire time. And I start to think about these things and some of the struggles that I went through, and I think about, like this poster said, what goes on the other side of the mask. And it really makes me respect and have loads of respect and compassion for the people that are engaging in these activities. And that's why I think it's so important that we remember that they're in prison. They're in prison because they did what they thought was right as opposed to what they thought was the easy way out. They're sitting in prison tonight in their cells while we're here having a good time, and I think that's great that we're all here to support this movie and support the idea of direct action, but I think we also need to remember that there are a lot of people that are in prison right now for engaging in these activities, and that's why I think it's so important that we always we wear the shirts, we wear the pins, we support direct action, we support movies like these, we support filmmakers like this. They're giving these opportunities to bring direct action to the forefront. I think it's really important that we always stand up to national welfareist organizations that are constantly putting down the grassroots movement and constantly putting down direct action and saying that they're not valid forms of activism and that they're ruining their movement. And I think it's really important that we all stand up and remind people that direct action has a rich history in America in the animal rights movement for 35 years, and in that time frame in America, not a single person has ever been injured, not a single person has ever been killed. And I think that's for a reason, and I think that's really important for all of us to remember. So again, I really thank all you guys for coming out here, because obviously there's an interest in the issue, and I really hope that all of you will take the time to remember the people in prison tonight. And try to reach out to them and try to put yourself on the other side of the mask and really understand the passion and the dedication that some of these people felt. Thank you. There's a bunch of tables outside with some great information from Food Empowerment Project, the Vegetarian Society. Golden Native has their stuff out there. Please support them. There's also a jar out there for two political prisoners tonight. One is Jordan Holliday, who is a young man in Utah who was subpoenaed to a grand jury where basically you have no rights when you go into a grand jury. You can't have an attorney. You can't plead the Fifth Amendment, and they're going to ask you questions about your friends and family, and they can do it without. You know, getting in trouble or anything. So he resisted and said, you know, it's none of your business who my friends and family are and who I hang out with. And they put him in jail for 10 months because he wouldn't talk about his friends. So we're raising money for him. We're also raising money for Marie Mason, who's an activist in the Midwest. She and her husband allegedly engaged in direct action similar to what we saw in the movie. Her husband got caught for something minor and got spooked and started wearing a wire and recording conversations between him and her husband, or excuse me, his wife, Marie, about the actions that they had done. And then he turned that over and used that as evidence to have her arrested. And on the day that she was arrested, he divorced her. It's basically to save his own hide. So he got a fairly light sentence of 9 years. But Marie Mason got 22 years in prison and has two kids that she's left behind. So we're raising money for the both of them so they can have vegan food inside of prison. And feel loved and supported. So please, you know, show your love for them.
Yeah.
So we have another show at 9:30, which is in a few minutes, so we can't talk long, and we'll basically be outside if anybody wants to ask questions. But I do want to acknowledge all the people that are here. If the crew and cast of Bold Native could come up, that would be awesome.
But do it quickly.
Real quickly, this is Mary Pat, who produced the film. Matt J. Carl. Jeff shot the film. He made it look beautiful. Jessica plays Jane. And Nick plays Dennis.
Applause, and we're able to give them, and we also had hoped to do Q&A, but I guess we have to hustle out of here. So they'll be outside. You can ask them directly. They'll all talk to you. That's awesome. Before you go, there's a couple things we want to say. Like Jake said, this is the paper with the list of prisoners. I think it is mostly national. Pick it up. The door to donate is at the door. Food Empowerment Project is working on some really important stuff. You know, we get questions all the time when we show this film. Isn't vegan like a luxury? Isn't it an expensive thing? Food Empowerment is one of the groups that is actually working on equality issues and you know, low-income communities of color who don't have access to healthy food. So support them. They have this really cool booklet. It's free, but it's not free to print. And they have a little jar. You can donate money to them, so do that. And Joaquin has an awesome band that's playing at Saturn Cafe on Saturday night. We're all going to be there. There's 20% off coupons here. If they're not here, just say you're with Bold Native, and I'll make sure I'll be there, and I'll get you one. Come see his band at Saturn Cafe Space Lounge. Karen Brighton Events helped us put this together. She's amazing. Cineholic did a bunch of stuff. They're presenting. They're awesome. You guys are awesome. And one more thing. So Red Vic is losing money. They are having a really hard time staying here. So what we were talking about where you were all watching the movie was doing a fundraiser where we show this film, because we're only here for one night. And if you guys like the film and you want to bring people to see the film, we're going to come back for one more night, and it's going to be a total fundraiser for the Red Vic. Plan your Valentine date here to come see Bold Native, and all the money will go right to the Red Vic. And we're going to try to do a couple other cool things that day too, as well. So,
and the DVD comes out next week, and the soundtrack will be on iTunes. So,
yeah.
Ask a question. We'll be outside. We need to get out so I can get the